It's a good tuna, but I think I paid too much.
I always wear my mask and wash my hands after going home.
I am the king of the ring.
Welcome to the Japan What Podcast, episode 182. I am your host, Matthew P.M. Bigelow. And I'm coming at you from the Aizumicho Studios in Shinjuku, Tokyo, Japan. The Art of Asia. Covering Japan Society 5.0. What's that? AI market trends, depopulation, migration, and more. And we thank you for joining the show today. Busy old day here. I live in central Tokyo. And I broadcast from there as well. I don't know if you want to add those things together in what is called the Aizumicho Studio. That's up to you, of course. And there's a lot of hotels around here, or a fair amount. I wouldn't say a lot. So I'm used to the tourists and all of that. And tourist season is really, there's 20 seasons now in Japan, and almost all of them are tourist season. And I'm used to watching them like walk around and stuff like that. But I had to go into IKEA, or IKEA, I guess it's called. And that's in downtown Shinjuku. And I went there. I was taking my daughter for a walk through the National Garden there in Shinjuku Gyoen. And I was like, oh, right, I need to get some hangers. And I know I can get them on Amazon, but at IKEA, they're like a tenth the price. You could get 10 hangers for like 250 yen. It's peanuts. It's cheap. It is right by Shinjuku Gyoen. So I, you know, my baby daughter, she's in the stroller. I am not. And we go out the park. We go into IKEA, and it's just swarmed with tourists in there too. And I'm kind of used to it, like I said. But then it kind of struck me. I'm like, why are tourists in a home goods shop? Do they need a sofa? Are they looking for something for their kitchen? It was like packed with tourists. Why would of all places, and I can understand they have some food there, but I was in the hangar section surrounded by tourists. And I was just like, why would you go all the way around the world in some cases, land in Tokyo, go to Shinjuku where there's all sorts of interesting things you can do, and just make a beeline for the IKEA shop or the IKEA shop and hang around the hangar section? I was like, I wouldn't do that. Hey, we're in Vienna. What do you want to do? Oh, I need something for my kitchen back in Tokyo. Instead of going to all this Vienna stuff, can you take me to a home goods center? Why were they there? Why would you go there? Why would, of all places, there's nothing for tourists in there. Why would the tourists go there? I don't know. I don't know what tourism is anymore. Blew my mind. And I think it's just tourism used to be like an adventure, but now I just think tourism is something you do on your phone. Is that it? People are like, oh, Tokyo is cheap, I'll go there. And they're on their phone going to Tokyo, and they're like, oh, IKEA, 5 stars, or IKEA, I'll go there. And they go to IKEA, and then they're on their phone, and then they go back to the hotel on their phone, like, oh, this place too, 4.5, is this what it is? Am I being oversimplistic? Because that's the only reason I can think why a place like IKEA would attract hundreds and hundreds of tourists. It blew my mind. I left there kind of going, huh. Because I remember like 10 years ago being down in Kyoto and walking past the Starbucks, and one of the Starbucks. I think at the time there was only one Starbucks in Kyoto Station, and that's what I mean. And it was just packed with tourists on Facebook. Everybody was on Facebook in the Starbucks in Kyoto. And at that time, it blew my mind as well, but I could kind of be like, maybe they're uploading their photos, they're waiting for somebody, blah, blah, blah. They're tired. They're walking around all day. Okay, I get it. But I was still like very judgmental, because that's what I do. I walk around and judge people, apparently. But now it's to the point where it's an IKEA. Weird. All right, enough about that. Let's take a look at some of the headlines for today. This is, of course, the Japan What Podcast. usually focus on tech and AI in Japan Society 5.0. Well, then it extends out from there because it's all connected in one way or another. Or the technology is so ubiquitous that you cover a different area and that area is now using a lot of Society 5.0 or AI tech anyways. And if we think about the reason I use Society 5.0 is because it's an overarching or overarching term that incorporates the technology into the infrastructure of our daily lives, as opposed to just looking at everything as a separate dot. Because artificial intelligence is very stupid and a lot of people hate it. And I hate a lot about artificial intelligence as well. But when you look at how it's applied in a layer or in a stack into something, that's when you kind of go, oh, that's why this company is making billions of dollars. They're not just like AI. They're not just saying we're AI and now we're millionaires. No, they took some kind of component where they didn't have the personnel and they automated it with some sort of data collection and application as part of like their back end software, something or another. And then something clicks. And now that company is running much more efficiently than its rivals. And now they're able to garner a lot more market share. There's a bunch of examples, but one of them are, for example, the delivery apps for food delivery, Uber Eats and all that. It's not like Uber Eats is all one AI company, but when you automate the orders to people on bikes with phones that can go and get them instead of having like a human operator trying to assign everything to everybody, that human operator gets overwhelmed in that role and bogs down the system. Well, now that system is just distributed in the cloud and it's automated. And now that delivery service has a massive advantage over other delivery services because they can handle the volume, something like that. It's just sending people notifications. That's all it's doing. But the way that it's sending them notifications is making that company billions of dollars, perhaps, for example, or garnering market share, definitely. So that's why I look at it in that way. But when you think about it in that way, it starts to apply into other things as well. That will be in the supply chain war. But before we get to that, I wanted to cover one thing that could be automated in the future. And this is from the Mainichi, Japan's national daily since 1922. We're recording this on September 24th, 2024, and this was published the same day. Harassment by boss, top reason for job leavers to turn to Tokyo quitting agency survey. And the reason I say this is because it could be automated is, well, now it's an agency handling people wanting to quit, but that could just be automated as well. I could just send my letter of resignation into like an AI chatbot that has some sort of legal application in it, and it leverages the law to tell my employer that I'm quitting. And if my employer wants to try to get me to stay, well, then the legal aspect of this chatbot would be able to accuse them of some sort of crime or something like that, because there's a lot of power harassment in Japan. I've only been victim. I've only been privy to it. I've only experienced it with one person, and it's very odd. It's a very odd thing when you realize what's happening. And it was over a period of a few maybe a year or even more. I'm not going to say anything about the company or anybody's name or something like that. But it was for a position that I had some familiarity with. But there was other things in this position that I had no familiarity with at all. And I suddenly had to do it quite a bit. And I wasn't sure exactly how to do it. So I ended up having to do some overtime, like 10 to 15 minutes a few times a week. And this company really didn't want to pay the overtime. But I was kind of like, I've had very limited training on this. And you want me to do it so that it gets used professionally out of the office. I need an extra little bit of time to do this, and I'm going to charge you. I'm not doing it for free. And it was only 10 to 15 minutes. I wasn't doing hours and hours and hours. But one day I did 10 minutes of overtime, and then 2 days later I did 15 minutes of overtime. And then 3.5 weeks later, I get a call from my job agency. And my job agency is like, yes, this manager at the company you're posted to wants to know why 3.5 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, whenever it was, you did 5 minutes more of overtime on this day than on that day. I was like, what? And I realized that that person was just trying to screw around with me, wasting my time on my day off, for example. And that's like, it's not something that you can really point at and be like, hey, you're harassing me. Because, oh no, we're just asking questions. But this is like an example, like a psychological, I don't know, like a pin in your ass. And that's why people are turning to these agencies. And they could be automated in the future. Let's begin. Tokyo. Harassment by superiors was the top reason for job leavers in Japan to turn to a job quitting agency to resign on their behalf. A survey has by the agency has found. So the agency conducted its own survey and they found that. Anyways, the job quitting service, Mōmuri, which means enough already in Japanese, is run by Tokyo-based Albatross Co., headed by CEO Shinji Tanimoto. The company surveyed 15,934 people who used the service between March 2022 and July 2024 and received responses from 15,744 of them. So just under 200 opted out. Respondents were split about evenly between men and women, with about 60% in their 20s and another 20% in their 30s. With multiple selections possible, reasons giving for using the service included, quote, some form of harassment by a superior, chosen by 33.9% of respondents, followed by a superior stops me from quitting at 30.2%. Specific comments included, my boss shouts at me during meetings, they're intruding upon my personal life, and I reached my limit and went to a job quitting agency after trying to quit and being held back by my boss several times. Now, this sounds weird, but sometimes in Japan, bosses just won't let you quit. I've never had that kind of situation, but I've heard about it. It's like, well, why can't you quit? They're like, ah, it's difficult. I try, but my boss says no. I'm like, well, just then quit. Yeah, it's not that easy. Okay. So they turn to this job agency. Anyways, so I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I just thought that was interesting that there's an agency now enabling people to quit, and it could be automated in the future. But notice that a lot of these people are 60% in their 20s and they're using this agency to quit. I'm wondering if this is like also to deal with the after effects of the COVID lockdowns, where for years in Japan, students were forbidden from talking to each other in class and forbidden from not wearing a mask and were forbidden from all sorts of developmental opportunities. And they just didn't have them. They weren't allowed to travel. Now they're in their 20s and they're working these jobs and they're not making money and they feel like they're getting harassed, but they haven't developed the social skills to confront anything. So they're just turning to an agency. Huh, interesting. We are going to see so much blowback from what we did to the kids during COVID, and it's only just beginning. This might be part of it. It might not be. But I call it the pendulum of karma, where it's swinging back and it's going to swing back hard. You don't get to do these things without suffering serious consequences. Most people are just like, noop, doop, 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 doop. But nah, it's happening. It's going on. Another thing I've noticed, especially among Japanese men, before moving on to the next topic. One, many young Japanese men are now sitting on the street in Tokyo, vaping and looking at their phones. I've never really seen that before so much. And this is, I'm in Shinjuku, so you're like, well, that's just dirty Shinjuku. Well, there's a lot of residential areas in Shinjuku, and there's a lot of Shinjuku that's just plain old normal. And I'm in the plain old normal area, and I've noticed a rapid uptick of just dudes on a Wednesday afternoon sitting on the corner of a road, vaping and scrolling on their phone. Hours. And another thing I've noticed is tattoos. And you're like, oh, Shinjuku, it's the Yakuza. No, no, no. Even 20 years ago, like working pretty close to some dodgy areas in Shinjuku, maybe 15 years ago, didn't see tattoos, even on the dodgiest of dudes. Maybe they had tattoos on their under their clothes or something like that, but it would never be visible. And now a lot more of the normie types of Japanese men are they've got leg, ankle, hand, neck tattoos. I'm seeing it on the daily. And these are all mostly men under the age of 25, I would say. And so there's that as well. So we're kind of seeing this anti, I think getting a neck tattoo is kind of antisocial. I'm pretty agnostic about tattoos. Do whatever you want to your body. But there is a difference between like getting a face tattoo and a shoulder tattoo. There's a difference between covering your hands with little symbols and then, you know, waving around people's face when you talk to them and having like a cross, over your heart because you're a Christian, or having like a pentagram etched into your asshole because you want to see Satan open its mouth and spew out your horrible nightmares when you make your trips of shame to the loo, all that stuff. If you want to do that, that's all for you and that's fine. But just I've noticed that there's a rapid uptick in those two things. All right, enough of that. Let's move on to the supply chain war.
Here we go.
Now, on the Japan What podcast, I purposely talk about these things because I believe them to be serious. It would be much easier to talk about manga, gaming, anime. It's the lion's share, and there's a lot of it, and people love it, and it's artistic, it's great, nothing wrong about it. But if you've been following the podcast, like, for example, talking about spy tech possibly being installed in electric vehicles from China and exported around the world, that's what I talked about last time. What else? When I was working in the telecommunications industry, in one of the major telcos in Japan, one of the big three, at that time, the company was working pretty closely with Huawei. The engineers from this company would go to China and test out some 5G stuff. It was before 5G was rolled out. And then they would come back with their findings, and they were working to buy a lot of Huawei telecommunications gear. There's like three major providers, or a few major providers, but some of the other ones are Cisco and Ericsson. And the thing that this company really liked about Huawei is that it was customizable, whereas Ericsson and Cisco, to them, weren't as customizable as they had wanted them to be. Basically, these companies would just say, here's our products, you buy them or not. But Huawei was like, oh, no, we'll make it to spec. We'll make whatever you want. We'll make a lot of it and sell it to you at the best price. So this company was like, woohoo. But then, of course, Huawei is dual use. There's no doubt about it. It was founded by a Chinese Communist Party colonel from the PLA, I believe, the army there, the People's Liberation Army. And this technology is basically allowing somebody else to build your roads. Who knows what they're putting into it? So this company was banned. And the idea was like banned from the backbone of the telecommunications companies, meaning don't use it internally. But they still had the idea that like a lot of this Huawei technology could be used on the consumer side, for example, Wi-Fi routers or routers, or however you want to pronounce it, and all that type of stuff. And I have a Wi-Fi router. It's very good. It's just a white box I put on a shelf, and it doesn't need anything else except an electrical input. And it repeats Wi-Fi signals into my apartment in Tokyo here very well. I should say mansion. I live in a mansion. and it's great. But as we learned from what happened in Hezbollah with a lot of assistance from the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, or some sort of intelligence agency therein, perhaps allegedly, is it safe? So we talk about these things because one day it does happen. It's not coming. It's already here. So basically, Hezbollah were using pagers as a secure form so that they wouldn't be tracked by cell phones. That's my understanding. And then these pagers were intercepted somehow and had a lot of explosives a lot of explosives were put into a lot of pagers. And then these pagers blew up and hundreds of people were injured, a lot of them severely so. Some people died via an attack that saw these pagers remotely explode. And a lot of fingers are pointing to Israel. We don't know if it is or not, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, who else would do it? I don't know. Anyways, but a Japanese company was wrapped up in all of this. And if you've been following, like, this seems like sci-fi nonsense, but if you've been following the podcast, it's not. It's not at all. It's basically what we cover on a regular basis. Some people will say, hey, you're a conspiracy theorist. I've had that happen. He covers interesting topics, but there's a lot of conspiracy theories involved. Well, the idea that this technology is dual use or could be used to explode in your pocket is now proven. It's without a doubt there. Japanese company denies making Hezbollah's exploding walkie-talkies. This comes to us from Reuters.com. I'm just going to kind of include this here because in the supply chain wars, now it is a war, isn't it? You never know how you're going to be wrapped up. And I look at this war as if it's a G7 versus BRICS, basically, type of supply chain war. And both sides are leveraging each other's weaknesses to gain more of a market share in the supply chain war. And then the BRICS have Chinese telecommunication technology and more encryption technology and more transactions between them, not using the dollar. And that's a power move right there. And then the G7 is still wanting to use the American dollar, and they kind of have this idea of a freedom. But we can kind of see that it's becoming less and less about freedom. And I don't know what it's about these days, to be honest. They always try to say it's about green energy. And I'm like, okay, is that really a supply chain network? It's really hard to figure out, really hard to understand. And one side's winning, and I think the BRICS side is winning at this point. It could turn around. But the fact that now that the G7 supply chain has officially been weaponized against civilians is going to make a lot of people and a lot of entities and agencies opt for Chinese. They're going to say, well, it's not going to blow up in my pocket like these G7 pagers. This comes to us from September 19th. The Japanese maker of the brand of walkie-talkies or pagers linked to explosions targeting the Hezbollah armed group that killed 25 people in Lebanon and injured hundreds of others said it could not have made the exploding devices. Quote, there's no way a bomb could have been integrated into one of our devices during manufacturing. The process is highly automated and fast-paced, so there's no time for such things, Yoshiki Enomoto, a director at ICOM, told Reuters outside the company's headquarters in Osaka, Japan, on Thursday. maybe a Thursday ago. The detonation of handheld radios and pagers used by Hezbollah on Wednesday in Beirut's suburbs and the Bekaa Valley followed an electronic pager explosion on Thursday that killed at least 12 people, including two children, and injured 3,000 others. ICOM said it halted production a decade ago of the radio models identified in the attack, and that most of those still on sale were counterfeit. But it doesn't really matter because Japan is now wrapped up into it anyways. And some people might not believe Japan, even though Japan's a very trustworthy nation. So we will continue to see a lot of people distrust Japan from being a part of the G7 establishment as the G7 establishment gets increasingly and unfortunately wrapped around the wheels of the of Israelis' aggression and against civilians and Hezbollah and all these. It's not like I'm not a Hezbollah fan, but I also know that it's not like every person who's in Hezbollah is carrying a weapon that's going to go out and kill Israelis. They could be a cousin of Hezbollah who's just like, here's a pager, call me if you need me, as a kind of way to be like, here's a secure way to contact me. Boom, that person dies. And everyone's like, ha ha, Hezbollah. It's like, well, I think there's a lot more going on here. And it indicates a major future negative impact on G7 supply chains. And if more G7 countries don't kind of isolate a lot of these actions being done by Israel, they're going to end up taking a brunt of economic kickbacks that are not going to be favorable. And I'm not somebody who's here to be like, you know, bash the Jews or hate on Israel or anything like that. I mostly stay out of wars, and I played Jewish music for 10 years of my life in a klezmer band. It's like, okay, there's that. But it's not as though that just gives a country a free pass all the time to do such things. Anyways, that's the supply chain for today.
Here we go.
Steer clear of, once you get into those like black holes of topics, it's like, I don't want to get sucked into that gravity well. Let's bail.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example, free us from the stress of driving, allowing us to safely visit anyone, anytime. We will have access.
All right, and that's the government's promotional video song for Japan Society 5.0. It's been going up and down. What can I say? They want all of this integrated into our lives. And it's moving forward, and we're going to cover that extensively from now. Here's something you probably never heard about. This comes to us from JidoUntenLab.com. Autonomous driving. No one is on board. Japan's first successful experiment in unmanned jet skis. Why would Japan be interested in unmanned jet ski? Is it Jetpan? An unmanned vessel, marine drone, developed based on a personal watercraft, has been remotely controlled to navigate unmanned. Oh, I shouldn't mention, this is from a Japanese website. I do a lot of the research for Society 5.0 in Japanese and translate it into English using AI translation, mostly just a Google extension. There are some, what are they called, hallucinations, but I like to incorporate those hallucinations because they get less over time, so we can kind of track how well the translation software is doing after a while. All right. And I also use AI art generator for the thumbnails of the Japan What podcast episodes. And I've also started including AI songs, very well-written songs by an AI program. I copy and paste all the headlines into Grok from Twitter, and I ask it to make lyrics based on the headlines. And then I pump those lyrics into a music generator, ask for some styles of music, and it on the other end, it just pops out like a 2 or 3 minute song. So if you stick around to the end of this podcast, you'll be able to hear the song and you'll be recognizing the lyrics of that song from the topics that we're covering today. It's very interesting. Anyways, back to the jet ski. The demonstration experiment was conducted by the Japan Multicopter Association, a general incorporated association. On September 2nd, 2024, they successfully achieved the first unmanned navigation in Japan by remotely controlling a special small vessel. Now, the reason why, in my opinion, Japan is doing this is because it's safe. It's in an area, in a lake, where you're not going to be encountering other people. You can track the data, manage the data, and it's not going to sink in a violent ocean. This is the way Japan usually starts such things. For other self-driving technology, Nissan, I believe, they were installing self-driving technology into office chairs where people could clap and the chairs would return into the desk, so you didn't need to push all the desks in. They were also using slippers with wheels on them. You'd push, and that had sensors, and you'd push like a button on the wall and all of the slippers would organize themselves into a neat little line at a Japanese inn. And this is just to test like the parking technology for self-driving cars in a very safe and effective way. So we can kind of understand that maybe Japan is planning on using more and more drones in its marine self-defense forces, and they're beginning the tests with jet skis. as a safe way to enter into this into this field. And you can imagine that in the future, if Japan's Marine Self-Defense Forces don't have the amount of personnel that are required, having a fleet of ocean-capable marine craft operated as drones, like a fleet to patrol areas or to understand if something is undergoing overfishing or for even some rescue operations, or maybe even challenging Chinese ships so you don't lose your crew. These could even be, if anyone from the Self-Defense Forces is listening, and I suggest you do, in future, why not put non-lethal or non-weaponized laser arrays on these ships as well, on these craft as well, so that you can distract and distress Chinese ships entering Japanese waters if they continue to up their interference game on your territorial water. By having them just shoot out lasers, it would be very distracting to nighttime encroachments. And it's a safe and effective way to deter. And you can film it too, and then put it onto the internet and call it Friendly Light Show for Chinese Tourists. Something like that. And people would understand it. It would be a nice, beautiful wink, wink to the international community, to the New World Order. All right, next topic. This one is about the AI-ification of convenience stores. Big ideas. Recently, one of the big three telecommunications companies invested a lot of money into one of Japan's main convenience store chains, Lawson, Lawson. It's a good one, and I've used their AI tech in there before for unmanned robotic teller services. Not good. But I also know that Lawson has been heavily invested into Microsoft's Azure cloud-based technology, which also has a lot of AI applications for inventory and stuff like that. So again, it's not like the entire chain is becoming some AI thing, but these applications being installed into how a company runs its stack can result in a lot of profits. Now, the thing that I use that I hated from Lawson, it's like a camera that's hovering above where the teller usually is, and then there's a display of a teller next to where the teller would normally be, and the camera's looking at you. And it kind of goes, "Hi, can I help you today?" with like a really cute kind of moving person on a screen. And I'm like, "No, we don't need you." That's what I said to it in English. And it went, "What? Sorry?" And I said, "Stop talking." And it went, "Okay." And it stopped talking. Now, I hope it was an AI service and it wasn't some disabled person, you know, making a couple of extra dollars an hour to help people remotely. Don't want to do that. Or do I? This technology is kind of intrusive. But for automating your inventory and not having a bunch of people who hate their jobs do it for you, because I've been a teenager working at Subway and doing inventory, you're just like, that's about 50. You have no idea what you're counting. Yeah. There might be like 20 people working at the Subway and 3 of them really take inventory seriously. 10 of them, not really. And then a bunch of them will just kind of say, yeah, I'll just kind of look at what the last person wrote and just kind of say a little bit less or a little bit more than that. And that's what they do. But if it's automated, you know, all the time. Lawson and KDDI's convenience store of the future is now fully operational, with AI cameras on the shelves and robots stocking the shelves, aiming to address labor shortages and other issues. Now, I'll be including these links at MatthewPMBigelow.com, and this one has a video so you can see how they're trying to integrate AI into their operations via technology, wireless technologies. How will the latest technology change convenience stores, and how will it change with the integration of communications? KDDI and Lawson have teamed up to unveil the convenience store of the future. They're always doing this, by the way. This comes to us from TBS NewsDig. I'm trying to find the date. Oh, September 18th. Lawson and KDDI have unveiled the convenience store of the future. Drones will be installed in the store, and in the event of a disaster, they will not only check the inside of the store, but also the damage situation in the city. In the store, which makes full use of the latest technology, robots are also in charge of stocking products. There is also a unique feature in the product advertisements. The reporter says, this monitor usually plays the usual loss in advertisements, but when I stand here, it introduces a bento for men in their 30s. So customizable promotions based on AI cameras. An AI camera is installed in the display shelf, and it analyzes the gender and age of the customer. Depending on the product picked up, it will recommend another item or display a coupon. When I was teaching the VP of IoT at a telecommunications company, he was always like, man, technology is great, but how do we monetize it? Like, what's the value? They're always trying to find the value and how to monetize. And that's if you're working for a major corporation, you need to monetize a product. It needs to sell. And I always said, why not just offer a coupon? And he would laugh because all of these things always offer coupons. That's what they do. It's like you install like this satellite in the upper areas of the stratosphere, and it beams down information and it collects all this information from a convenience store. And then the person is getting analyzed by an AI camera, and then it spits out a coupon saying 50 yen off your next bento. That's the amazing thing about the technology. It's like such a disappointing end, isn't it, to all of that? You'd expect something like the bento would fly out of the shelf and it would follow you back to your office. But no, it just spits out a coupon. The strategy is to increase the number of visits to the store itself by distributing coupons for the paid membership service that many AU users use and by distributing Povo Giga to customers. I'll get into Povo Giga in a second. So online medical consultations can be received on monitors in the store, and mobile phone contracts can also be made. So convenience stores are likely to take on various functions. KDDI President Makoto Takahashi, that's actually a good idea to be able to buy your cell phone from a convenience store with a contract from the company. That's smart. That's really smart. Because it takes a lot of money for telecommunications companies to have a bunch of stores. But if you could use existing infrastructure and offer products in the store to customers that are already there, that's really smart. That's very smart. I'm blown away by that idea. If you think about it logistically, it's pretty awesome. Regarding the digitization of convenience stores, 7-Eleven and Family Mart are also introducing AI and robots. The robot stocking the shelves is not done in the front of where the customers are. It's done behind the coolers or something like that. So I've taken a look at some of these robots, and one of them, for example, it's just an arm on a pole, and the arm reaches into the stock shelf, grabs a bottle, and puts the bottle into the refrigerator at the back of the refrigerator, because it's open, because it's all one big cooling unit, into this specified shelving space. And that's all it does. So you don't have to have people back there doing that. The arm on the pole just reaches for drinks and stocks the shelves automatically. It's not a bad idea. What I hate is when the robots are like trying to look human. It's like you want to have like a shelf stalker. So you have to have the entire humanoid robot walking around like being, I am your robot shelf stalker. Do you want to be my friend? I will now stock the shelves. It's like a 1950s sci-fi version of it. Like in some animations, you'd have a robot cleaner and it would be a robot attached to a vacuum cleaner. But in reality, the Roomba is just the robot is inside the vacuum cleaner, and the vacuum cleaner doesn't need a humanoid robot to accompany it to do its tasks. A lot of these new stocking ideas as well are just arms, robot arms on poles that reach into areas and put them into other areas. All right, next one. This is continuing off the other one. On September 18th, Mitsubishi, KDDI, and Lawson announced their vision for the future of convenience stores that we just said. By the end of 2024, KDDI telecom giant in Japan will let users of their online-only mobile phone brand, Povo, which was mentioned in the other one, boost their data capacity simply by popping into a Lawson convenience store. With each visit, you can recover 100 megabytes up to a total of 1 gigabyte. Basically, how this works is you would have an app with your location setting turned on, and you would allow it to see where you are, and then it would add up 100 megabytes of data to your data plan. I have something like 56 gigabytes a month or something like that, something crazy. I never worry about that stuff, but a lot of people who are poor or on little plans, little data plans, might find this interesting. And that's the idea of, I don't know, like location as a service. You go into a place, and I guess now that you're in there, you also get a coupon sent to you. Always send a coupon. Always send a coupon. That's what you do with this technology. You always send a coupon. Next one. Kyoto City introduces AI camera system to detect when infants are sleeping face down to prevent suffocation and sudden death. I research AI cameras and facial recognition separately because AI cameras are designed to recognize pixelization or pixels. When a bunch of pixels are identified as an object, that becomes something that you can... That becomes something that you can identify and then put into a software package and sell it to people. For example, if it's a bank, you might want to have pixel identification set to knives and guns or suspicious activity and sell it that way. Or if you are at a farmer's market, you would want some different settings. What would be some settings at a farmer's market you would need for AI cameras? People coming in and pretending to sell organic produce when it's not organic produce. So you might have some sort of AI camera system set up to recognize organic produce or produce that's mass produced. I don't know, something like that. Who knows? That's just off the top of my dome. But Kyoto City introduces AI camera system to detect when infants are sleeping face down to prevent suffocation and sudden death. This comes to us from September 20th, 2024. On kyotonp.co.jp. Actually, don't like Kyoto City very much. Sorry, everybody. Kyoto City introduced a system this month at a kindergarten that used AI to prevent infants from sleeping face down. Cameras are installed in the nursery rooms to record the positions infants take naps in. If the system detects infants sleeping face down, it will send a notification and maybe a coupon leading to safe monitoring. This is said to be the first time the system has been introduced in Western Japan. Now, this is behind a paywall, so I'm not going to go into it too much. But this is the idea where if you have a lack of staff or some of the staff are writing notes, these people are very busy. My kids go to these things too, so I understand how busy they are. To have this installed to prevent suffocation or death or even worry, you know, if you can understand these things clearly and preventatively, I think a lot of people are happier as a result. All right, next one. This comes to us from FNN Prime Online. Measures to ease traffic congestion at Miyajimaguchi. AI cameras to broadcast congestion status online in November in Hatsukaiichi, Hiroshima. Miyajima is that very famous torii gate. It's a big orange kind of Buddhist symbol that's in the ocean in Hiroshima. And a lot of people go there and love it. And I do too. It's a beautiful thing. In order to alleviate chronic congestion on roads around Miyajimaguchi, Hatsukaiichi City has introduced a new initiative to use AI cameras, according to the mayor. This year, we will work with the national government to implement new initiatives, such as using AI to provide information on congestion within districts. Chronic congestion has been an issue on National Route 2 around Miyajimaguchi. So last year, Hatsukaiichi City and the national government carried out a social experiment in which the tolls on the Hiroshima-Iwakuni Road between Hatsukaiichi IC and Ono IC were halved. These are expressway tolls, I believe. It was reported that the low-speed section below 20 kilometers has been shortened and congestion has been alleviated. Oh, interesting. So they just made some areas cheaper to drive traffic that way. Hmm. This year, the event will take place over 10 days in November, including weekends and public holidays. In addition to the same measures as last year, they will install 3 AI cameras on the national highways around Miyajimaguchi and post information on the traffic congestion in certain areas on a special website in the hopes of easing traffic congestion. Based on the results of this verification, Hatsukaichi City plans to verify further mitigation measures. Yeah, I remember talking about this with executives at the telecoms industry as well. I always thought it would be an interesting idea for people who are about to encounter a lot of traffic, a lot of congestion. What if they were told to go a different route and then maybe this different route has some restaurants that don't get a lot of traffic on it? When the program starts redirecting traffic to go along this new route, restaurant owners would receive notification of that, and the restaurant owners would be able to maybe offer a coupon or something. Like, I'm serious, like offer a coupon or offer a special deal or try to get some of that that traffic into their websites. I mean, restaurants. One idea was something like that. And because it's all being mapped and targeted, you can see what works and what doesn't and iterate on that. Next one. Tobu Railway and Hitachi to introduce biometric authentication at 100 locations, including hotels and trains. A lot of these companies, major companies in Japan, they own a lot of different things. KO Rail, for example, has KO Rail. Then it has these KO supermarkets at some of its major stations, or not major, stations where there's a lot of people going home. And then there's also KO taxi cabs or something like that. So these companies are smart and they understand how to make money. And that's why you don't have just one individually owned convenience store leveraging all this technology, because they're not going to get the return on investment. But if you are a major corporation, you can invest in this. And like I said, automate certain things in your back end that would then speed up your company as a whole. And these major companies all are bogged down by ridiculous processes, et cetera, et cetera. On the 3rd of September, this is coming to us from kankokeizai.com on September 22nd, 2024. On the 3rd, Tobu Railway and Hitachi announced their future implementation plans for the shared digital identity platform using biometric authentication, which the two companies launched in April this year. The name will be changed to Sakulala. And the service, which uses biometric authentication for payment and age verification, ooh, that's one thing I want, will be gradually rolled out to 100 locations nationwide, including Tobu stores and Tobu hotels. Age verification. Because there's plenty of places in Japan where you have self-checkouts, but if you want to buy a beer, you have to buy it from somebody. And then more and more of these people are from other countries. And in Japan, they're very good at minor gestures that keep things clean. Like if I want to buy a 500 milliliter can of beer, I might grab it from the side and I would pass it to put it on the counter to buy it. And the clerk, who is Japanese, would also grab it by the side, scan it by the side, and give it to me so that I can grab it by the beer side. But somebody who's working in the Japanese convenience store who might be very nice might be from a country that has a lot of... It's just so dirty. And you give them the beer, and they put their unclean hands on the top of the beer, and then they scan it, and then they touch all the money, and then they put their hand over the top of the beer and then give you your beer. That's so disgusting. It's like, do I have to carry on cleaner around with me to deal with this? Are you just purposefully being a piece of shit? Seriously, it's disgusting. So having age verification means I would never have to deal with these people ever again with my life. And that's what I really want. This service utilizes biometric authentication to securely access personal attribute information stored in the digital space without using a smartphone or IC card, and provides one-stop services such as payment, point allocation, and identity verification. Currently, the payment function using finger vein authentication has been introduced at 3 Tobu stores. Takakazu Ishida, general manager of Hitachi's Managed and Platform Services Division, took to the stage at the Sakulala Biometric Authentication Service launch event held on the same day. He cited issues such as labor shortages, age gaps in usage due to rapid digitization, and the management of identity verification in emergencies, and pointed out that there is an increasing need for safe and fast identity verification, whether in peacetime or in an emergency, in person or online. Toba Railway's Director of Corporate Planning Department, Ryohei Maeda, said the system will be introduced at Toba stores, Toba hotels, etc. within the fiscal year, and on reserved seat trains on the Toba Tojo line, such as the TJ liner, next fiscal year. Outside of the Toba group, the system will be introduced at Joshin Denki next financial year and at 100 Family Mart stores in fiscal 2024. It says fiscal 2014. That's a hallucination. Anyways, I'll stop it there. It's happening, whether you like it or not. It's happening. And a lot of these people don't need to use it. But if you're somebody who's always using Tobu, 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 you might just say, screw it. It's time to use Tobu. Next one, we're reaching the end here. Osaka Gas Network operates gas pipe patrol services on Shinki bus routes. AI cameras improve productivity and safety quality. This is a Japanese headline that's been translated, and the way you know that is because it's way too long. aismiley.co.jp. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but Osaka Gas Networks has begun operating gas pipe patrol services using onboard cameras that automatically recognize construction sites using AI on route buses operated by Shinki Bus Co. This is the third company to operate gas pipe patrol services using AI cameras in Osaka Gas Network's city gas supply area. Osaka Gas Network requests prior consultation with other companies regarding excavation work near gas pipes. However, there are cases where work is carried out without prior notice, so we patrol areas near gas pipes where the impact would be greatest if they were damaged in order to prevent damage. Patrols using route buses equipped with AI cameras began in June 2021, and in fiscal 2023, approximately four times as many unannounced construction works were discovered in the areas where the cameras were installed compared to before the cameras began operation. Specifically, the AI will extract images that are highly likely to be of construction work from images taken by route buses equipped with AI cameras while they are traveling. And an operator in the office will check the images and determine whether they are construction works that have been notified of or not. By replacing the work that previously took an entire day for inspectors to carry out checks, productivity is improved and the increased frequency of patrols has led to improved security quality. Furthermore, from April 2024, with the aim of expanding the patrol area, Shinki Bus will take over patrol duties by utilizing some of the bus routes. This has already led to the discovery of unreported construction work that exceeds the number found by human patrols, contributing to improved safety quality. Osaka Gas Network plans to continue holding discussions with other route bus operators with the aim of expanding its operations within city gas supply areas. That's interesting! I didn't expect that. I read the article briefly, but reading it again just was like, so the bus becomes an inspector, essentially. You put the camera on the bus, and now the bus is the inspector, constantly reporting everything with AI identification tags back to a data center or back to an office, accessing it via a data center. Isn't that interesting? So instead of hiring those people that walk around town with a clipboard looking for bad things and people breaking the law, now it's just the bus going past you. This, to conclude, a lot of this technology, whether it's the AI camera or the robots in the back of a convenience store, a lot of this is like, it's not noticeable. In many ways, it's passive. The AI cameras on the highway, the biometric authentication, these are just like little tiny holes installed in existing infrastructure that have a whole bunch of wireless applications to them. So I'm kind of leading this to say this next wave of technology that's surrounding us as we speak, it's not noticeable. We have to think about it in a completely new way. And I've said this before, but when the iPhone came out, it was like, whoa, what is that? The TV came out, it's like, whoa, what is that? When airplanes started flying around, it's like, whoa, what is that? There's this whiz bang, whoa, what is that aspect to new technology. But now the new technology is just a tiny hole in something that's already there that is now transmitting wireless information to a data center that it's being organized into a platform by some tech company and then distributed to its clients in various formats around the city by a person sitting at a desk looking at a computer that's already there. So there's this network layer that's expanding and expanding and expanding. And that's where the new technology, that's where a lot of the growth is. We can already see that this was requiring a lot of money, innovation, engineering, application, and sales to make it real and make it happen. And it is happening. But it's not as though it's like a new building that's going up where we go, look at that new building. Or it's not as though it's some sort of new rocket that's being launched by Russia. It's like, that's a hypersonic missile and kaboom, there's the evidence. It's no, these are just tiny holes in the walls of existing infrastructure that are leading us through this door into a next vision of what a future technological society looks like. But we as citizens aren't really engaging in anything kind of new. We still go to the convenience store and get a beer or a bottle of water. It's just being stalked by a robot in the back. We don't really notice that when we pay with our face to get on the train, we're just looking at a hole in the wall. It's not as though there's some robotic waiter there going, "Welcome, sir, let me scan your face and welcome to the future." It's just like you look at something and it goes, boop. And then you keep going. So when we think about the transformations of society, it's always been obvious. But this transformation of society is not obvious. So when people kind of say AI is this mythological economy and it's going to collapse before our very eyes, yeah, there's going to be some sort of that, obviously and definitely. But most people aren't thinking about it in the terms that I am saying right now, in that it is little holes implemented into existing infrastructure that require a huge amount of investment and the construction of data centers, which nobody even really notices where they are anyways, to make it happen. And then the data centers are filled with AI graphics cards and GPUs and NVIDIA technology. Nobody really notices that either, but that's where a lot of the information is happening. So we're kind of being structured into this, I call it like a two-tier society, where the lower tier, the anchor tier for this AI society, is constantly feeding data into the upper tier so that the upper tier can utilize it for their own profits, for their own gains, to streamline their own systems, or maybe to even create breakaway societies where they get to be surrounded completely by automated AI services while the rest of us feed information into other services that empower the elite services to an even greater degree. You can call that a big old fat conspiracy theory if you want to, but what would you do if you were in control of this? Would you want a robot arm in your convenience store, in your kitchen, stocking your shelves, or would you be trying to do something a little bit more insane with your hundreds of billions of dollars and insane tech friends that are surrounding you on your chats? What would you do? What would you do? All right. That's the end of Society 5.0 for today.
The fourth industrial revolution will enable us to create a new society. Artificial intelligence will transform the big data collected through the Internet of Things into new wisdom. Society 5.0, a technology-based, human-centered society. The fourth industrial revolution will raise our standard of living and solve various challenges we face. It will, for example...
Well, it sounds like a giant... I don't know what it sounds like. We're going to do one last thing before taking a look at ending the podcast today. So I was on JapanForward.com, and this is the English arm of the Sankei Shimbun. And a lot of people say, "Oh, that's a conservative one. Oh, that's, oh, oh." But I'm like, okay, it's so conservative. They have their DEI goals and their sustainability aims and stuff like that. So it's not. But sometimes they have these really great articles. Some of the best, in fact. This one comes to us from September 23, 2024, and it's the 24th today, like I mentioned. And this says, Uniqlo, the clothing company, founder stirs heated debate on what's best for Japan's workforce of the future. There's basically two sides to this coin, and one side is migration, and the other side is technological innovation, where we kind of copy and paste Japanese expertise into technology so that even though it's technology doing it, it's still Japanese in a way, whereas the migration comes in and you can't copy and paste that. They come with their habits, like putting their dirty hands all over your beers when you just want to go and drink a beer, but now you have some filthy finger twiddling the twat of the beer, and now you can't really get out of that, can you? The beer twat has been twiddled. Beginning. The Japanese people may perish. This prophecy from Tadashi Yanai, chairman and CEO of Fast Retailing, the parent company of Uniqlo, has sparked heated debate. Yanai advocates for improving productivity through immigration. He has faced opposition from Zozo founder Yusaku Maezawa. Zozo is I believe it's clothing. Yeah, Zozo Town is the largest fashion e-commerce in Japan, over 1,600 stores offering more than 9,000 brands. At any given time, more than 1 million items are available for purchase, in addition of more than 2,600 new items per day. and it goes on from there. So Zozo Town's another clothing company, more or less. And other prominent business leaders have also weighed in, igniting a flood of both support and criticism alone. The debate began in late August during an interview with Nippon TV. Yanai stated, quote, "The Japanese people may perish if they don't learn to get work done with a select few people." He argued that with the ongoing decline in the labor force, efforts to improve productivity are inevitable. Yanai said Japan should follow other countries by accepting immigrants capable of filling intellectual roles such as management and research. He's probably going with the Singapore idea. Through this, he claimed, but Singapore is a city-state and Japan's a country. These are very different things. Japan's not Tokyo. Through this, he claimed Japan can improve efficiency and achieve results with a small workforce. He also expressed concerns that as the population declines, quote, "we might reach a point where public and private services start becoming unavailable," end quote. I've talked about this before too. Nuclear power. What about that? Zozo founder Maezawa was quick to disagree, posting on X to emphasize the need for strengthening national solidarity. Quote, "I feel the exact opposite. I believe that maintaining our Japanese identity will be key to our nation's future strength. I'm uncomfortable with any approach that weakens that identity or blindly conforms to globalism, leading us to be swept away by it," end quote. Whew. I think I like this Zozo guy. Not that I'm against migrants, but the idea that you can just, this idea of magic dirt, where people from another country can just magically come to yours and your dirt will somehow change them from their dirt. And it's like, okay, you're over here now. Now we're just going to copy and paste us into you and you're going to be fine with that. It's like, that's not how humanity works ever. Meanwhile, entrepreneur Takafumi Horie explained on his YouTube channel that globalization is already well underway. Quote, "if we try to stop it, we'd have to close off the country like in the days of Sakoku, isolationism." I have to say, Maezawa's view is naive, he remarked. And it is kind of naive. Additional, Hiroshi Mikitani, chairman and CEO of Rakuten Group, another online platform and mobile service provider, stated in a magazine interview, quote, "I don't know the true intent behind Yanai's comments, but Japan indeed lacks energy," end quote. It does. It does lack energy. Too many dudes with tattoos. Too many dudes vaping on the street in the middle of the day. Scrolling. He pointed out that the recent labor reforms, which imposed a uniform cap on working hours, were problematic. Employees at startups and IT companies in other countries, especially those in intellectual industries, are working intensely. Simply telling people to go home early in Japan won't make us competitive, he said. Did Uniqlo help drive deflation? Yoichi Takahashi, a former Ministry of Finance official and professor at Keitetsu University, commented, quote, "The question of whether Japan will perish is a macroeconomic issue involving both monetary and fiscal policy," end quote. He added, quote, "Yanai and Maezawa are discussing business management, which falls under micromanagement. There are countless ways to run a business, so it's impossible to determine which approach is definitely right," end quote. Indeed, I'm just kind of throwing this in here because it's not as though Japan is unified in any way about what to do with its declining population and how to manage the complexity that the country is in. Simply by copy and pasting everything into AI does not necessarily make you a country that has retained its values, because values change over time. Can the AI's values change if it's a computer program? Only if it's being changed by the culture that's adopting it. Moreover, what if you're importing a lot of your AI programs from people that have designed it overseas? Now you're just importing a different form of migrant. It's an AI migrant. It's AI migration into your society. And the way that those people design their programs might be very different from the way that you would like them to be designed, even though you might be thinking that you're thinking you're on the same ways of thinking because you're using the same words, but in fact, your interpretation of those words are very different from each other. But you don't know that, because why would you know that? Because you haven't really explored those ideas in depth. You're just kind of looking at moving things around to implement them in a cost-efficient way. If you import Indians en masse into your country, you get India. But what about importing Indian technology en masse into your country? Do you therefore get Indian technology? And is that a good thing? Is that something you'd want? If it is, great. If it's not, maybe not. Have you thought about that? Have we thought about that? We're not thinking about that. We're just kind of thinking that technology is a blank slate. But if we're thinking about automation and the people that are automating that, well, those people are imparting their values, whether they know it or not, into the things that they are designing. We can kind of understand that a Japanese Toyota is quite different from a Ford Mustang, an American Mustang, and that a BMW is quite different from a Lada, and a Lamborghini is quite different from one of those three-wheeled cars that Mr. Bean hates in England. So the technology used to be obviously different, but when we think about digital wireless communications, it all appears to be the same, when in fact it's not. So in addition to the idea of whether you would like to have technology or immigration, you need to think about the origin of that technology and the biases of that technology encapsulated within the coding of what has been imported into your country. I've used this example before, but with self-driving cars. Would you like to have a self-driving car that's been coded by hardcore Hinduists, where they might be saying, if the car is a family of four and it has to hit a cow or drive over the edge of a cliff, what if these people are like, we got to save the cow, and the family of four just goes over the cliff? And you don't know that. And they think that it's just obvious, the Hinduists. You know, just as an example, I'm not saying all Hinduists would want this, but what if they decided to do that? It's like, okay, we're going to save the cow, our holy cow. And another country has a different view or a different vision or something like that. Or what about some sort of heavily racist country that wants to give AI technology that will benefit one major ethnic portion and punish another? We don't know these things because we're not thinking about them in that way. Just like with the pagers. The pages that it blew up from the Hezbollah importing lower technology to have a more secure comms network. Well, that was intercepted, and now a lot of people are missing their kidneys and other things and dying, and the hospitals are overflowing with the wounded. That's because we're not thinking about the ramifications of this technology. I don't want to keep a phone in my pocket ever again. I don't know about you, but I'm not sure if I would like to have a migrant in my pocket either. So these are kind of these difficult subjects to wrestle with, and we indeed have to wrestle with them, because if you're looking at your family, or if you have kids like I have kids, this is the society we are shaping for them as we talk, and is this the way that we want to go? So you've been listening to the Japan What podcast. Go check out the website, MatthewPMBigelow.com. And until then, I'm going to play the outro song designed by AI based on the topics that we've been talking about today, or that I've been talking about today. MatthewPMBigelow.com. Give us a donation at paypal.me/JapanWT. That's paypal.me/JapanWT. Until next time, everybody, I bid thee a big old fat ja mata.
In Tokyo, tourist spot to IKEA store. Not for sofas, but what for? A Japanese firm, they shout and declare. No walkie-talkies that explode in the air. Japan, what podcast, what tech meets tradition? AI's fusion, a new vision. Biometrics on the rails, baby safe sleep. Lawson's future, so creepy and sleek. Osaka gas with AI on the beat. Patrolling pipes on a dirty street. Iconic gates and traffic soon to be seen. Online thanks to cameras, AI beam. Bosses harsh, make workers flee. To Tokyo's quitting agency. Jet skis roll with no one at helm. Japan with podcasts, extend the melt. On Japan with podcasts, tech meets tradition. AI's fusion, a new vision. Biometrics on the rails, baby safe sleep. Lawson's future, so creepy and sleek. Bum furniture shops to AI's grand spree. On Japan, what podcast tech gets creepy? It's not in the future, it's already here. The best thing to do is to prepare. Prepare.